Welcome to the Frequency 49 Show. I'm Paul McDonald. Week 10 of the 2015 NFL season was a bye for the San Francisco 49ers, meaning that they've now gone 2 weeks without an interception, sack, or in fact a loss. Gotta enjoy the little things. With the break in the schedule, Gary, Brian, and Deepak took a road trip to the National Missing Sock Museum in Llanbobl. But before they went, Brian and Deepak recorded an interview with Jeff Deeney from Pro Football Focus.
Can you tell us about Pro Football Focus and sort of how fans can learn more about the game and the analytics that you use to grade out every player on every play in every game?
Absolutely. Yeah, you basically just said what I was going to say. We grade every player on every play in every game. It was actually founded by Neil Hornsby, who is from the UK. And this is actually my fourth season with them. He's been doing stuff on his own for many years, but I think we officially started back in 2007 grading players and collecting data. Like I said, I started back in about 2012. So there's kind of two separate things we do at PFF. One is the grades that, you know, you see all over the place. And then at the same time as we're doing the grading on every play, we collect a tremendous amount of data on, you know, statistics on every single play too, that go into a database. And so with that, so we kind of have two separate sections of the site. We have one with the grades, and two, we have a tremendous amount of advanced statistics that are available on the site as well. But then going forward to that, and one of the things we do now is that we provide a lot of this data to our NFL clients. 20 of the 32 teams in the league use our data to various degrees. And then also we also have several partnerships with major media clients. I think we've talked about offline about, you know, you'll see our stuff on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah.
So NBC uses our data, and we have some other companies that use it as well. When I started, there was probably about 7 or 8 full-time guys and about 25 part-time people, and I was one of them. And now we probably have about 20 full-time guys. I think we're probably close to about 150 full-time guys. We've really expanded exponentially the last couple of years, just basically because as of last year, we started doing college games as well. And obviously you can do the math, you know, we're at most 16 NFL games a week, but we have about 50 or 60 college games a week. We have to do grades and collect data for us. We've hired quite a few people in the last 12 months or so.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Jeff, I have a quick question for you, if I may. I think it's extraordinary that you can provide a statistical metric on every player in every game, okay? How do you do that? How do you actually go about assessing what each player has done? Do you have people that are assigned to certain players in a game and you watch game footage, or how does that actually work in the practice of collating that information on each play?
We have... honestly, there's probably about 30 man hours that go into the grading and data collection on each play, or on each game, excuse me. Usually probably about 3 or 4 people. There's an analyst who will do the actual grading. And then we have a second person who does what we call player participation, which is basically what 22 guys were on the field, where they lined up, and what they did on a play. For example, if it's, you know, Aaron Lynch, you know, on a pass play, did he rush the passer? Did he go back into coverage? You know, that type of thing. And then we have another 2 people who will basically do the same thing kind of as a review process to make sure that everything is as accurate as possible. But the analyst will actually, when he does watch a play, will watch all 22 guys. And most of the time, the majority of the players on a single play will get a 0 grade, which is basically average or neutral, which is just basically what they did, what they were expected to do on a play. So for example, if it's a run to the left, most of the guys like on the right side of the offensive line, unless for some reason they, you know, let a guy go by him untouched and the guy came from the backside and made the play. But most of the time they'll get a 0 grade because they're not really involved in the play. Or on a pass play, you know, if obviously the offensive line's involved, but, you know, there might be, if it went to the wide receiver on the left, the guy on the right, you know, it's going to be a 0 grade. So you're not really looking at 22 guys, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Sure.
You know,
sure.
When you're making a grade, you're probably, or on a run play, you're probably looking like on offense, maybe 4 or 5 guys, and the other 6 are automatically going to be a 0. You kind of know from doing it, you know. Sure. And then, so it's that kind of cuts it down a little bit. But it takes about, you know, it depends on the analyst and how long they've been doing it, but about 8 to 10 hours to go through a game usually.
Well, that's what I was just about to ask, yeah.
So, yeah, Jeff, the actual grade, then, is not a subjective grade. It's actually based on the statistical data that you've collected from each player and compared to a benchmark of what the grading should be. Is that correct?
So we have the manual, the analysis manual we have is a PDF. It's well over 100 pages. And so if just for example, if on a running play, we kind of have a lot of examples. If you're an offensive lineman, like if you, you know, make a successful block, you know, what type of block is a plus 0.5 block or a plus one block? Or if you get beaten on a play, what might be minus 0.5 or minus one? You know, and the same thing for a running back or wide receiver or quarterback. So we kind of have in mind of what kind of plays get graded what. And so that's usually how we do the grading on each individual play. It's not so much like this running back got 7 yards, he gets, you know, so on and so forth. It's the statistics and the grading are really pretty separate.
Okay.
Example of this would be if it's 3rd and 6 and a cornerback gives up a 4-yard catch, he gives up a completion for 4 yards, but he's going to get a positive grade from us because he made a stop on 3rd down. So that's kind of where, like, you know, it may look bad for him in his stats, but technically that's a positive grade for him on the play.
Sure.
Okay. So have you always been into the analytics of sport, and has working for Pro Football Focus changed the way that you watch the game as a fan?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've been a stat head ever since I was a little kid, and always been in. You know, I grew up being a 49er fan. Our family's had season tickets for the 49ers since before I was born. So huge football fan, huge stat guy, which is how I kind of came upon PFF as a fan of the site for a couple years. And then when they started growing a bit about 3-4 years ago, I applied, went through a rigorous process where I had to do about 5 or 6 of those 10-hour games to make the cut. I think at that time they were hiring 5 people, I think, out of 200 applicants, and I don't know how many of them actually finished the process, but I was one of the lucky 5 to get hired. And it's I have learned so much about the game and everything just in the last 3 years. I thought I knew a lot about football when I started, and I have learned so much, and I've also realized I still have a ton more to learn.
Sure.
But it's been really fascinating kind of getting into the analytics side and getting to help, you know, a lot of our NFL and college clients that we have, and providing data with them and helping them with their scouting reports that they use to game plan. So that's actually really pretty exciting on my end.
Jeff, do you find yourself using these grades, you know, when you're talking to buddies and friends, people in a bar about football, that your very intimate knowledge and understanding of the statistical measures have over your understanding of how a game might play out or to justify a sports argument? Do you flex that particular muscle that you have in your armory?
Yeah, I do, and probably way too much. And it's actually been really helpful. I mean, I know one of the guys, I mean, just an example. I mean, I know J.J. Watt is you know, considered one of probably the best defensive players in football. But I mean, like 2-3 years ago, you know, we were pounding the desk for him, you know, back more like in the 2012 range. And so that was one guy where I would, you know. But yeah, there's definitely when we start talking about quarterbacks or, you know, so-and-so and this guy's overrated and stuff like that, I definitely will throw out a grade or a stat or something, you know, that I have off the top of my head to settle an argument. Probably, like I said, probably a lot more than I should, and probably drive my friends nuts. But yeah.
I bet. You'd be a good person to have in a bar on your side.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or a bad person. I don't know.
Well, I wouldn't argue with you.
So obviously being a 49ers fan, we've got multitude of on-field and off-field problems right now. So kind of how does the team grade out on the field compared to where we've been in our recent run of championship games and a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the grades just as a whole, I've been a lot worse this year. And yeah, I also had started last year, kind of the 8-8 season. But yeah, I mean, obviously the right side of the offensive line has been, you know, the big problem. And, you know, we have Marcus Martin is our lowest graded center in football. Jordan Devey is near the bottom. As far as guards go, I think and the only reason why he's really not at the bottom, he's 79th out of 81, and it's just because he's been splitting snaps the last 5 games, so he's not playing full games.
Yeah.
So his grade hasn't been quite as low just because he's not been getting snaps. And then, you know, you go to tackle, and Eric Pierce isn't much better. He's 68th out of 75. So, I mean, as you know, everyone's, you know, the eyeball test tells you that when you're watching games that those
Absolutely,
three guys are
yeah.
struggling. But the grades definitely back it up. And you know, I think this is probably the week Andrew Taylor gets the starting job, or, you know, the following week against Seattle after the bye. He's actually been grading just slightly above average for us, both in run blocking and pass protecting. And, you know, he got 3/4 of the snaps this week, finally, against Atlanta. So I think this might finally be the week where he gets the full-time gig.
Okay.
Jeff, you've sort of preempted an answer to a question that I had in mind to ask you. And that's really going, apart from Staley, the rest of our offensive line is 49er fans. We're either bottom or in the bottom two or three grades. And now our starting quarterback, Blaine Gabbert, until last Sunday, had the very worst QBR rating in recent history. How long do you think he'll be able to survive with this current offensive line? And I have to ask you that question. Ignore for the fact that there's a rumor saying Anthony Davis may return, but let's just look at what we've got right now.
Right, yeah, and it's, you know, it's interesting, and, you know, there were some things that Blaine Gabbert did well that actually did not surprise me this week, and there were some things he did well that did. I actually think he's going to take some of the stress off the offensive line a little bit, just because, I mean, there are two numbers. One is that just over the course of their careers, Gabbert has gotten rid of the ball from snap to release about 1/4 of a second quicker than Kaepernick has on average. So, I mean, that's going to take a little bit of the stress off the line. And then the other thing is, Kaepernick, just over the course of his career, has never been one that's performed very well when he's been under pressure, just the numbers. Whether it's quarterback rating or whatever, his completion percentage is somewhere around 35% when he's pressured this year. That's the lowest in the league. But the one number that stands out to me is when he's pressured, he's actually sacked 24% of the time, which is the second highest number in football behind Marcus Mariota. And last year was about the same number, and it was the second highest behind Bortles, which was another rookie last year. So I think, you know, with Gabbert, with his athleticism, and just, I think he's got a little bit better pocket presence than Kaepernick, that, I mean, you look last week, he was pressured 16 times and he didn't take a single sack. So I think he's actually going to make, you know, as mediocre of a quarterback he's been in his career, I actually think he's going to make things a little bit easier on the offensive line as a whole.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look last week, it was against a subpar defense at home. You know, how he performs and how the line performs, especially next week in Seattle, is going to be a whole different test.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, how do you think he actually, or how did he grade out against Atlanta, sort of against Kaepernick for this season and against the league average?
We gave him a 2.5 overall grade on the day. Okay. Actually, 1.8 of that was actually from rushing.
Sure.
From, you know, a couple of first downs he picked up, especially the one that kind of sealed off the game at the end.
Yeah.
He had a 0.6 grade pass. You know, things that we were talking about, stats and grades, another example, that deep pass to Jerome Simpson that hit him right in the hands, that ended up being an interception, he actually got a positive grade for that pass, because that's obviously Simpson dropping that ball and knocking it in the air had nothing to do with him. So that's just another example of how grades and stats differ. But he had a 2.5 grade on the day, which is above average. Kaepernick on the season's actually minus 15.6.
Okay.
Which is, yeah, he's actually, which ranks 35th out of 36 quarterbacks. Stafford's the only one that's actually below him. They could have done it the week before against St. Louis, a good defense on the road. They could have put him in after the bye this week against Seattle, but I think they kind of tried to ease him into the lineup with, you know, an easier matchup if possible, and I think it's definitely worked out. Like I said, I think he might get a reality test coming up against the Seahawks. So
yeah, it's interesting you said that Stafford's the only quarterback that's graded below Kaepernick, because there's sort of been two or three different articles written on different websites potentially that Stafford could be someone that the 49ers might have their eye on over the offseason. So potentially that's not really going to be much more benefit than Kaepernick next season if that were to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, those are both guys who, you know, 3 years ago were considered one of the better quarterbacks in the league, and
yeah,
they both just regressed so much. And I mean, obviously they're two different quarterbacks, where Stafford's more of a pocket guy who kind of slings it around everywhere. But it's going to be interesting, one, if Detroit decides to part with him in the offseason, and then two, what the market will be for both him and Kaepernick when the time comes.
Jeff, I've got a question for you, and again, I want to take it back to Blaine Gabbert, because he's our starting quarterback, and I think he's injected a bit of effervescence into our team with the win against Jesus, I've forgotten who he played now. Atlanta. Yeah. You know, when he was at Jacksonville, his previous grades are a reflection on how bad Jacksonville were, or was Blaine Gabbert really that mediocre whilst he was in Jacksonville?
I think it was a little both. I think, one, he really was that mediocre. I think he just had a lot less experience. You know, he's coming into the league, but he wasn't getting a lot of help. Their offensive line wasn't very good. They didn't really have their wide receivers were pretty weak on average. So I think it's kind of a little of both. You know, and even when he came to the Niners last year, he looked terrible in the preseason. And everyone's like, why did we sign this guy? Is he going to make the team? And then everyone's kind of like, why did we bring him back this year? And he actually looked pretty good in preseason. I mean, I think it was a dramatic improvement this year as opposed to last year. I don't know if it was his second year in the offense or what it was, but he seemed to be a lot more comfortable in the Niners offense this preseason. And he kind of went through that Alex Smith syndrome too, I think, where I think he went through three or four offensive coordinators during his career in Jackson. I don't think that helped much either.
Sure.
Yeah, you touched on sort of statistics and gradings just now. There was a picture doing the rounds on the internet this week, which I'm sure you've probably seen, comparing Kaepernick with Newton. And it was based on kind of raw on-field stats alone this season, where obviously Kaepernick's just been benched for Gabbert and Newton is being touted as a potential MVP. Is this a fair reflection of the season so far?
I think, you know, and I think Newton's had a very good year. I don't know if I would be putting him in the MVP category.
Yeah.
I think maybe he's getting a lot of that just because they're undefeated. To me, I think it's Palmer or Brady is your two guys leading the MVP race. But I did see that graphic. I think the one thing, you know, if you look at quarterback rating, I mean, I think two things. One is, to me, quarterback rating is more a reflection of how the offense is performing as a whole than just a quarterback. But Newton's had just his wide. I mean, I know they lost Kelvin Benjamin for the year, and his wide receiving core has struggled this year. But his drop rate, as far as the percentage of passes he gets dropped, is actually more than double of Kaepernick this year. And he's had several instances. We were talking about Blaine Gabbert and Simpson, but he's had a few passes where they were right in the wide receiver's hands, and they get, you know, batted in the air or dropped and were picked off. And then if you go back to the Monday night game a couple weeks ago, where I think he had 10 Ginn deep on a bomb that was probably going to win the game for him, and Ginn just flat out dropped it. So he's not getting a lot of help from his wide receivers. His quarterback rating is near Kaepernick's. I think it's more of a reflection of how bad his wide receivers have been this year more than anything.
It makes you wonder how a team are unbeaten when Ted Ginn is the number one receiver, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think it shows you how good their defense is and how good their running game
absolutely,
is.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Jeff, fantasy football has been in the news lately, okay? And granted, baseball is a million miles removed from pro football, but the question I want to ask you is, how feasible would it be to build a franchise based on players with metrics that aren't necessarily the marquee names that we all know and love? So would it be possible to really drill down through the stats and look at players that, you know, virtually unknown to the average fan, could actually compete and be productive in the National Football League?
So we could call it PFF ball.
Yeah. I think the big difference between, like, you look at Moneyball with baseball and football is that for the most part, you know, baseball is kind of, you know, you can isolate the pitcher and the batter for the most part. I know you have the fielders and they have the numbers as far as their range and stuff like that, but the majority of the game is isolated with the pitcher and the batter, where with football you have 22 guys, you know, running around and it's kind of organized chaos. So it's hard to compare the two with that, where I think, like, if you look with a local example here, like the Oakland Athletics, where I think they use exactly what you're talking about of finding value in guys because they don't have a very large payroll, and some guys that maybe not, you know, be known to the average fan that they can bring in and it'll be productive at a low salary. I mean, I think in football you can do that as well, but probably not to the same degree. And I think to me, analytics is more of a using that in conjunction with film work and the eyeball test and the, you know, the old school scouting, if you will. And I know there are a lot of teams, whether they're using our analytics or on their own or a different company, where, you know, when free agency rolls around or when the draft rolls around, that they use a lot of this data to kind of help them with their scouting. I think it's one of the reasons why we kind of started doing college games a year ago, was because we kind of saw a niche of, you know, if we start doing some of these grades and these analytics and stuff like that, that NFL teams can use this as far as their draft preparation.
Sure. And the scouting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one example that I know is like, you know, Henry Anderson of, he went to Stanford last year, but he was with the Colts this year. I know he's out for the year now, but he was a guy that graded out extremely well on our site last year. And we were just, you know, raving about, and he ended up dropping into the third round and was having a tremendous season with the Colts until he got injured. And that was one guy where we saw where our grades actually kind of were a reflection of how he was going to turn out in the NFL. And there might be some instances where it's vice versa, but that was actually one that we were really excited to see.
Sure. Thank you, Jay.
Yeah, sorry, just to go back on something that we were talking about earlier. Are there any kind of free agents that are out there right now that have been rated well by PFF in the past that the 49ers should effectively reach out to kind of help them out this season? And sort of following on from that, what did the 49ers actually see in Pears and Devy when Evan Mathis was available at the time?
Yeah. You know, honestly, I think, you know, there are, you know, unfortunately, I think any free agents that would be out there, I think they could really contribute the guys this year. I mean, are already on a roster or on a practice squad somewhere, most likely. It's the nature of the beast in the middle of the year. I mean, you know, the Niners made a several offseason signings that, if you're looking at our grades, were kind of head scratchers. I mean, if you go all the way back to Sharice Wright, was one of our worst graded quarterbacks in the league over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And they kind of gave him a pretty good signing bonus and had him penciled in, I think, as one of the starting corners. And, you know, after preseason that, you know, didn't happen. They ended up going with Acker and ending up letting him go and eating a bunch of money. And when he got signed with Baltimore, you saw how that went for them the first game. The Niners ended up tearing him up. And then if you look at Pierce and Devy, it was the same thing. Pierce is never, you know, he played tackle his first, you know, seven, 8 years in the league, and was never graded more than, you know, average. Is pretty much below average most of those years. They had him playing guard last year in Buffalo, and he graded really poorly. I think he just because he was out of position. But again, you know, and I think that was more of a case where he was going to be their swing tackle, and, you know, the Anthony Davis thing kind of sprung up on him, and they just kind of didn't really have a choice, and it was too late to try to find someone better. But the Jordan Devy move was kind of a head scratcher to me because he was awful in our grading with Denver last year. I think he was somewhere around minus 16 or 17 just for five games. And I know,
wow.
Okay. I mean, if you look on Twitter with the Patriot fans and just kind of do a search on Twitter where, I mean, they couldn't be happier to see him go. And at the time I didn't think it was a big deal because I think we traded our fifth tight end for him. And I was feared he was a guy that, you know, had an outside shot of making the roster. And if he didn't, it wasn't a big deal. And then all of a sudden, it was kind of the shocker at the beginning of the season that he was going to be their starting right guard when everyone thought it would be either Brandon Thomas or somebody else. And he, obviously, I mentioned earlier, 78th out of 80. So he's kind of performed as we've expected. And it looks like, I mean, he's going to be on the bench going forward. But yeah, some of these moves from a PFF perspective were a little bit of a head scratcher on the offseason.
Yes. So what you're telling us effectively then is the 49ers are not one of the 20 teams using PFF.
I unfortunately cannot confirm or deny. Most of the teams in the league have a signed confidentiality agreements.
Sure. We're not going to go down there. Jeff. I mean, you've got lots of different metrics and lots of different statistics to measure so many different things. Is there a stat that doesn't exist that you would love to see?
Oh my God. Off the top of my head, I honestly can't think of one. What people see on the premium section of our site is literally just scratching the surface of what we have in our database and what we supply to NFL teams. And as far as, like, you know, past tendencies of, you know, when this guy in this personnel lines up in, you know, in the slot, they, you know, pass more than they run, or when he lines up in this position, he runs this, you know, tends to run a post route, or, you know, they like to do a wide receiver screen in this formation or whatever. I mean, we have so much of that stuff that we can provide to NFL teams. It's just, I honestly can't think of anything right now that we don't collect. And honestly, a lot of the advanced stuff we have started collecting the last couple of years have come from requests of NFL teams asking us, you know, hey, do you guys do this? And we're like, oh no, but we can. And so, we have so much data on every single play. I can't possibly think of something actually that we don't collect.
Jeff, how long do you keep the data for?
We have data going back to 2007 and we still have it, in our database. So Yeah, we don't really archive anything.
So you can actually map out the career of a football player from 2007 till the present day and
yeah, show absolutely.
The progress or regression or whatever that player would have made.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have, I mean, some of the tools that we provide NFL team, we have actually something that's actually really cool that takes all of our data as far as like what 22 guys were on the field and where they lined up, what kind of pass route the guys, all eligible receivers ran, where the pass went, did the quarterback roll out or did he have to scramble? And we can take all that data and actually draw kind of an X's and O's chart of exactly what happened on that play. And and that's actually pretty cool. And you can filter by, you know, pass plays, run plays, different formations or personnel and stuff like that. So we have a lot of tools in house that can take a lot of our data and kind of put it into a graphical format or into, you know, usable stuff for the NFL, basically different PDF reports and stuff like that.
Okay, this is slightly obtuse, and I really apologize for that. Okay, but this is just coming to my head. So if there was a play that was made and there was a penalty on the play, does that instantly negate the stats for that particular play? Bear in mind that sometimes referees don't get it right, but that doesn't mean it wasn't a great catch or he was still in bounds or it was a great hit by a defensive player. You know, do you still include that as a statistic, even though the play might have been ruled negated by the officials?
So for our advanced statistics that are on our site, we don't include the statistics as far as that goes. As far as the grading goes, that does get included because, you know, for example, if, you know, if a quarterback goes back to pass and I'm trying to think of an example, but, you know, he throws an interception, but there happens to be a penalty on the play that wipes it out, but it had nothing to do with the quarterback making the bad throw. You know, he still deserves the grade for making the bad throw. And so that grade will actually count. So as far as our snap counts go and our grading, it does get counted, but just for our statistics itself that you see on the site that we, you know, same as with the NFL goes. I mean, that kind of matches that where if there's a play gets wiped out by penalty, then the stats don't count.
Sure. Thank you, Jeff. I know it was a bit obtuse, but...
I've had that question before.
Okay.
You mentioned earlier that obviously you're looking at college football as well now. So Pro Football Focus could have a big impact on or some impact on this year's NFL draft. And we're now going to start seeing people basing their mock drafts on the information that you guys are providing, do you think, as well?
I think a little bit. I think most of our data probably is exclusive to the NFL teams. I think there's somebody that's an example. So I don't know if any of the mock drafts you'll see will be based on some of our stuff. I think some of the mock drafts you'll see in NFL War Room, some of the data used will be from our site.
Okay, that's interesting.
Jeff, I asked you about a statistic that doesn't exist that you'd like to see measured. Now, obviously, one of the assessments an NFL team will look at when they're looking at a player are his statistics, you know, how well he does certain things at a breakdown. What I want to talk to you about is how important are the intangibles, the things that statistics can't actually quantify, you know, players' attitude, upbringing, you know, attitude towards the game, that kind of thing, leadership qualities, the stuff that you can't actually put a statistic on. Is that just as important as the things that you can put a number on?
Oh, absolutely. Almost, I'm going to say it's even more important. I think it goes back to your question about kind of the money ball question about can you put together a team with just kind of the analytics. I think you kind of have to use some of the analytical data with some of the other stuff because there's, you know, I think from a on the field perspective, I think maybe if you want to look at Colin Kaepernick, I think some of the stuff that maybe doesn't show up a lot in our numbers is like, you know, Colin Kaepernick's pocket presence or his, you know, not being able to read downfield the receivers and, you know, who's open and stuff like that. And some of that shows up in our data. I think like I mentioned the sack percentage of being 24%. You know, kind of talks about his lack of pocket presence, but there's, you know, there's some other things there that maybe don't get quantified in numbers, but I mean, the off the field stuff, I mean, whether you want to talk Greg Hardy or even just like an Anthony Davis, for example, who, I mean, I'm not trying to rag on him, but here's a guy probably doesn't love the game of football. And, you know, and I think there's some guys like that where, you know, that's a big thing when you're scouting, where if you have some guy who is, you know, whether he's kind of a gym rat or a film nut or someone who absolutely you know, especially the quarterback position, I think, and I mean, you can go back to Kaepernick. I mean, I think, I know Aaron Rodgers has talked about, you know, and Steve Young as well, of just like, you know, the minutiae of in March and April and May and going into the facility 12 hours a day and watching film and memorizing coverages and just, you know, and things like that, you know, and having to have that passion for the game, where if you don't have that, I mean, that can play a big factor of whether, you know, you're a successful quarterback or not. You know, and those are things that, you know, we can't really grade on our site, but if you're a scout and you've done your homework, you know, you can. And so I think it's the combination of that, those kind of things, and watching film as well as, you know, maybe using our analytics that kind of you can put together to kind of get that, you know, the best rating, if you will, or best scouting report on a guy.
Sure. Jeff, I've got one more question for you. You know, and this is something I'd like to ask you from your perspective, both as somebody from PFF and a fan of the game. We see that the game is now expanding internationally. And of course, in London, we've been privileged enough to have three NFL games a season for the last couple of years. How important do you think that is for the NFL's long-term direction? And ultimately, how is that going to affect your business as well? Do you think an international boundary being opened up is going to give PFF more of a scope to work with?
I mean, I think the NFL obviously sees Europe and the UK very important and sees that as a very viable market. That's why you see more and more games being played in London. And I think that's just obviously whatever better is better for the NFL is better for us. You know, I think, you know, the interesting thing with us is being that we were founded in the UK, and even a lot of the senior guys are still full-time guys are UK guys. So, I mean, that I think definitely helps us a bit as well. The interesting thing is when it comes down to is if you're ever going to get a full-time team in London. And that's the interesting question, is I think you probably have the fan support there for that, but I think you kind of run into more of the logistical problems with travel. You know, if you got a team in London, it's got to play 8 road games a year. They're going to have to fly across the pond 8 games a year, or, you know, maybe come back, you know, come out for 2 or 3 games at a time and fly back. But, you know, then the other issue is with free agency and the draft, you know, if, you know, they may have a hard time getting free agents to want to play in London because, yeah, you know, if you're, you know, you live in the United States and maybe you don't want to live in the UK for whatever reason.
Sure.
Tax or reasons just, as well.
Yeah, or draft. You know, if you get someone you drafted who doesn't want to live there, what, I mean, if you're a London football team, what are you going to do? And I think the other issue is, I mean, obviously, you know, especially look at the Niners case with so many injuries lately, where, like, you know, they're bringing in, you know, multiple guys on Tuesdays for a workout, whether it was Sean Drone or Pierre Thomas or, you know, some cornerbacks or, you know, whatever. You know, it's easy to do if you're the Niners and you just, you know, buy them a quick plane ticket. But if you're London, having to have someone, you know, come out at a moment's notice on a Tuesday to fly across the pond, you know, to work out might be a lot more difficult, or you may have a hard time, you know, talking that guy into doing it. So I think from a standpoint of that, I think that's where the difficulties are. I mean, I think that team would definitely get a lot of support, you know, in the UK. I think it's just logistics of making it work from a competitive standpoint might be tough. And that might be why they don't have a team yet.
Jeff, have you ever been to one of the international series games in London?
I have not.
Okay, well, should you ever decide to come across the pond, we'd be honored to have you as our guest.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we'd love that. We kicked around when the Niners played there a couple of years back and just unfortunately couldn't make it work. But yeah, no, I get up at 6:30 in the morning to watch them. So, Pacific time.
You probably know from speaking with the British guys that you've got there working that you know, there is a very large number of sort of very knowledgeable fans over here. But I think the thing with the London franchise is a lot of us have been with our teams, you know, through the 80s when we've had to work really hard to find coverage of the teams, be it trying to tune radios into, you know, the Armed Forces Network or watching the one game a week that we got on TV back in the day, or the highlight show that would be on a week later and things like that. And slowly but surely we've got sort of more coverage season by season over here, and a lot obviously with the international games, you know, that's only increased a lot of the coverage that we've got. But I think a lot of people are, you know, because they've invested so much time and effort, and you know, people go on holidays out to America to see their teams and stuff, I think that a team over here would be very hard for a lot of people to fully buy into. So I'm not 100% sure whether it would actually really, really work over here unless they made some kind of massive investment in, you know, the grassroots level of the game as well, I guess, to get youngsters into the game.
I think we get a little bit of that even here when we have, you know, of European football, you know, we call soccer here. But yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm not a huge soccer guy, but I have friends who are huge, you know, Premier League fans and, you know, stuff like that. And I mean, we have it, it's televised a lot more now. And obviously you can, you know, the internet and stuff like that. But, you know, 10 years ago, it was tough, you know, to find those games on TV or anywhere, you know, to make them watch here.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have someone who might be a passionate, you know, Manchester United fan, for example. But like I said, if we got an expansion team here, you know, in your case, you guys are, you know, Niner guys. Mm. If Jacksonville, the Jaguars happen to move to London, I mean, you know, the question is everyone who's a passionate Niner fan, they're also going to become a Jaguar fan. Probably not.
We're just going to go when the 49ers play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's actually a really excellent point you raised. And I think, like you said, if you start a grassroots plan with, you know, at the youngster level where you have guys, you know, people who haven't, you know, developed that passion for one team yet, and that can be where they get most of their fan base. But you make a good point. I mean, I think, you know, you guys might attend games just as football fans, but as far as supporting the team, that's a different story.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, and I think to that degree, perhaps the international exercise might serve better as 3 or 4 games a year rather than having a full-blown franchise here, because the fans here are quite sophisticated. People are beginning to twig now. They're saying, you know, we gave you the Beatles and the Led Zeppelin. You give us the Atlanta Falcons and the Kansas City Chiefs. Come on, we deserve better.
Yeah.
And you the Jaguars.
In Jacksonville, I guess, I take it.
Yeah, yep. You know, we want some premium games here. We want some teams that are marquee teams, you know, because we do demand a sophisticated product, from the preseason games that used to be played years ago to having a full-season game. That's great, but I think that the level of sophistication here, as far as the NFL is concerned, does merit the NFL to give us a little bit more than what we're getting in terms of the quality of the teams, if not the quantity.
Yeah, and I mean, I fully agree with that, because I think the problem with the NFL is that the teams that sell out every game that are successful or not are the ones that don't want to give up a home game to London, where the teams like Jacksonville, and I mean, you know, even a few years ago, maybe in the Niners when they weren't playing very well, and some, you know, Detroit, you know, teams like that, where, you know, they're having attendance issues. Well, that they have no problem giving up a home game for London. And then unfortunately that means you guys get the more mediocre teams instead of the good teams. I mean, and I've heard people, you know, say the same thing you guys are saying about having the same team over there because of the same problems, instead of doing that, having, you know, 8 or 10 games there and selling a season ticket package that way, where, you know, you can buy season tickets for the NFL in London and just happens to be 8 games with 16 different teams instead of having a franchise actually headquartered there.
Right. Which I think might be more sustainable in terms of the internal logistics for the league. Because I think we've reached a stage now where we could comfortably get between 60 to 80,000 for every NFL game that's played in London, which is a considerable amount of people.
Yeah, because, I mean, you have a hard time in some stadiums doing that here. So, I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, my idea for an international series, which I've kind of I preach to anyone who will listen to me, is knock one of the preseason games on the head completely. Turn the NFL into a 17-game season. Every team hosts an international game every second season. And then you can expand the league globally. So you can take it out to Australia, Japan, Mexico, Germany, Holland, Canada. You know, whoever wants a game, whoever shows enough interest, whoever stumps up enough money for the NFL, send everyone out internationally, and then no team loses a game anywhere. They're gaining a game, but it's going out internationally across the globe, not just over to London. You know, expand globally out over Europe, out into Asia, out into South America, and that way then nobody loses, you know, the precious home games that we keep seeing. The Patriots will come over, but they'll never play a home game, and the Packers may come over, but they'll never give up a home game. So if you expand the regular season into 17 games and make everyone play an international series, everyone still gets their 8 home games, plus they get a nice little jolly off to somewhere else in the world, and then they get a bye week, or you fix in 2 bye weeks and extend the season.
Yeah, well, I'm all for anything that has less preseason games.
Yeah, definitely, especially the week 4 games. I mean, Christ.
Yeah. I mean, especially just talking as a season ticket holder, I mean, we have to buy 2 of those games, you know, at full price. And I mean, I be honest with you, I haven't been to a preseason game in probably 20 years. We just either donate them or give them, because it's just not worth the trouble to watch, you know, you know, like I said, your starters play half a quarter and et cetera. But no, I mean, that's actually a really good point. I mean, I think, you know, I don't, you know, the only thing is, you know, you may have a hard time selling the players to going, you know, to 17 games from 16 just because of the wear and tear on them. But otherwise, I mean, I think that's a fantastic idea because you still have 8 home games and 8 road games. So you don't lose anything there. And you probably get more money just from that one game as opposed to the, you know, whatever 2 preseason games you might lose. So, and I mean, I even, you know, you're talking about expanding into other places. I know there've just been some rumors about the Niners playing a preseason game in Australia next year. I don't know how legitimate that is, but, so they may see him start branching outside from the UK and Mexico.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, we really appreciate your time, coming on this evening. Can people follow you on Twitter at all?
Yeah. Our website's profootballfocus.com and excellent. Twitter, you can find me at PFF_Jeff.
Excellent stuff. We'll definitely send people over in your direction and, we'll give you a nod when the podcast is edited and, ready to go. And, if you could, retweet it out there for us, we'll appreciate that greatly.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us, Jeff.
No problem. Yeah, anytime.
Thank you very much indeed, Jeff. I really appreciate you taking the time out to speak with us.
Yeah. Very insightful chat.
All right. You're welcome. Anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Thanks to Jeff Deeney for giving us his time, and thanks to AudioNautics.com for our theme music. That's it for this episode of the show. I've been Paul MacDonald, you've been the audience, and this has been the Frequency 49 Show. Bye for now.